All right. Welcome to episode 30 of the Rated NA podcast for nerdappropriate.com.
It's the big 3-0.
It's the big 3-0. Ash is gone. He left us last episode. We did the Comic-Con pre-show, and he is currently enjoying some vacation time in the mountains. Sans internet, as we understand.
Does he have a beard at this, like a big bushy beard? And a
can he? I guess he probably can grow a bushy beard.
Yeah.
Yeah, he can grow it overnight.
So that's Melissa.
Hi.
My wife is on the podcast.
Hi.
And also with us, the other woohoo you just heard is Amy, the frequent guest.
Yes.
So hi, Amy.
Hi.
How is it having your own microphone?
It's kind of weird. There's a thing in my face.
That's what she said.
We call that the microphone.
Jason's not even here.
Oh.
Because he's not allowed in the room.
No, he's very upset about that.
So, it's only been since Valentine's Day since Melissa was on, and it's only been since
a couple weeks.
PAX?
Was
that the last time you were on? When were you on last?
I came on for something else.
You're like,
what
our,
was that something
our
else?
Journeyman guest.
I don't remember. Has she Ryan done was here. Has it was when you brought people all back.
For 20, was that
25, I think.
Yeah.
Has she done the most guest spots, or is it Ryan that has done the most?
Ryan's probably done
equal, I would say.
Five or six.
Oh, he might have beat me.
And I think you've done four, maybe?
Maybe.
I'd have to check through the notes. I think it's around that.
This is my second one.
This is your second one. First, like, actual.
Yeah.
One. Aside from the Valentine's Day?
Yeah.
Spectacular?
The spectacular. Mm-hmm. We need to do more holiday specific episodes.
I think we should just plan to do a Valentine's Day show every year.
But like
just
Halloween.
But we'll play a different game. Is what I'm saying for Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
We can do other themed podcast weeks, you know.
The next holiday is Labor Day.
So we all have babies.
Yeah.
I'm in labor.
And then we air that live.
That's gross.
Labor is gross. We can all work really hard.
So what's everybody been doing then?
Let's see. Scott? I'm still playing Dragon Age. What is that? It's going to be like another 70, 80 hours of my life that have gone away. I don't know. I don't know. Is it supposed to be longer? Do you know?
I don't know. I haven't gotten there yet. I got to finish the first one. So
how far are you into the first one? How many hours would you estimate at this point?
Oh, not that many. Probably about 20.
You have a ways to go.
It's a sad state when 20 is not that many hours into a game.
I think I looked at my save for Dragon Age 1, and it could have been like in the 60-hour range,
yeah.
I think. Yeah.
Well, I think that's Christina has been through one like three times, and she just finished two?
No, Ash, I think she just started two.
Ash said that her first playthrough of Dragon Age 1 was 90 hours.
Because
she reads and does everything.
She does everything.
Yeah. But she's also now been through it two more times.
Because she figured out that if she was a human, she could become queen or something like that. Oh, are we ruining stuff?
Oh,
I didn't
really?
Even think about that. Sorry.
This is the second one?
Womp, womp.
No, one.
No, oh, it's not the second one.
Maybe.
Wait, what?
Maybe,
oh,
no.
Sorry.
All right.
I haven't even played it.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
She said that and it means nothing to me, but I assume it means something if you're playing the game.
It's still a good game. There's so much going on in the story. It doesn't even.
Sorry.
Well, that's why she's. I think that's why Christina's played through it three times because she's played it so much every time.
Yeah.
So she gets a different story every time she's played it.
We should have her on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She
talk
is now
the Dragon, the game.
The Dragon Age
talk about
expert.
Dragon Age. sketch has. I don't know why. Has been in my head.
You just
since
can't move beyond
this
it.
Morning. Like,
that was
oh,
like
I remember why. I
2
was
months ago, right?
Melissa's. No, I was that. Well, the last time they did it, yeah. Melissa's one of her sisters, the one we've previously made fun of on this podcast, has been dressing up all gothic lately.
But not cool gothic, like 90s.
Like 90s mall gothic.
Like what I used to
like. What
to
I
dress
used to
like.
Date yeah. and what you used to dress like.
Sans trench coat.
And, and so I was going to look up Goth Talk from SNL and send it to her.
Oh, yeah.
And I could not find it anywhere. No,
just,
Goth Talk
no,
is...
No, I know.
Yeah, you just start watching other things instead.
No, but the like I looked up Goth Talk and what came up was the Barry Gibb talk show. And and I watched the first like 10 seconds of it. And now literally all morning I've been like, talking about the Barry Gibb talk show.
You know what I can't stop watching on SNL.com is what's up with that?
Oh my god, I so love good. That sketch.
What's up with that?
I just because it's so random.
When Sudeikis comes dancing out every time, yes. I lose my shit.
And does like the pop and lock.
Yes. Yeah. Oh god, oh every goodness. Time it's with amazing. His like curly wig on or whatever he's wearing
in the tracksuit.
Just like with the running man.
Oh god, I'd die.
Did you see when they had the two Lindsays?
When the actual Lindsay Buckingham was there. That was really good. So. You been doing anything?
I just finished, which is old news, but I just finished the whole Legend of the Seeker series on TV.
Yeah.
Via Netflix. And I started the books finally. So I'm about a third of the way through the first book.
How many episodes are there?
Episodes?
They only did 27, I think, right?
Okay.
No, per season. There's 46 or 43 total episodes, which combine things from book one and two and three possibly. So, but according to Christina also, who actually got me into it, the 11 book series is amazing.
Oh, and so it only scratches the surface.
Yeah, yeah, it's actually only just the first two books.
Oh, weird.
The 11 book series. And then the show got canceled.
Oh,
yay.
Cool.
Like everything else I love.
Mm-hmm.
I've been canceled.
Oh, you're canceled.
That's so sad.
Yeah.
And Amy, you've been Dragon Age 1 or no? That's
no,
just on
I've
the
been,
docket of
I've
playing.
I've been playing Portal 2 and I just finished and it was the most amazing game ever. I loved
it. It's really good.
I haven't played it yet.
So smart. And the guest voices, incredible.
There were air quotes there.
There were guest air quote voices.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, good.
I haven't I think Ryan said he was going to let me borrow it, but I haven't played it yet.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know why. I just
sometimes just games just kind of get by your schedule.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's super funny. Like it's just hilarious. You just get to points and it's just like this is so ridiculous. Yeah. It's such a smart game though. Like the puzzles are you don't even know you're really playing a puzzle. It's just so incorporated into the story itself.
You're just kind of doing stuff and it's gratifying.
Yeah.
So it's like a lot of fun.
Yeah. I mean, I love the co-op we did.
We played a couple of levels.
Yeah,
oh,
co-op.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, it was fun.
Yeah.
But I just haven't, you know, I just want Valve to do Half-Life, man.
Yeah.
I haven't played
Valve
that
do
one.
Half-Life? You haven't played Half-Life?
No. I have the orange box, but I haven't played.
One even? None of them? Mm-hmm.
You can go through the whole thing.
It's, oh, yeah.
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 Really good.
Is it, how long is the gameplay?
Not too bad. You can get Half-Life 1 on Steam for
pennies.
Cheap.
And they run
well,
those
that's
sales.
On Orange Box, right?
Yeah.
Half-Life
well, what do you,
one?
It's
no,
one
it's
and
not.
Two.
If, do you have Half-Life
I thought
one
it was two
in
the
box?
In the episodes.
The Orange Box may have been Half-Life 2 with a...
Episode.
The redo of Half-Life 1.
Oh.
Oh.
Well, I don't know. You can check.
Okay. Check, yeah. Because there's Half-Life 1, Half-Life 2, and then episode one and two.
Oh. So it's like Half-Life Weird. 2, episode 1, episode 2, and... We've been promised a 3 or we anticipate a 3.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So either they need to put out a Half-Life 2 episode 3.
It's Half-Life 1.
Right. Half-Life 2.
2. And then
Half-Life
2 more
two.
Games.
Yeah.
Episode 1 and episode 2.
Right. And then there should either
right.
be
okay.
there should either be an episode 3 or
there's
just a or a Half-Life 3.
There are four
3.
Half-Life games
awesome.
You can play right now. And Half-Life 1 looks aged, but plays awesome.
Okay.
Like,
it's still
like
good.
The graphics, I mean, it's from like 95 or 6 probably.
Something.
What is Half-Life?
It is the free man.
It's not like the the Half-Life of the caffeine in coffee.
No,
it's like the precursor to every good game that's out right now.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
What's it about?
It's like a first-person game where you run through and you're this guy who worked for this horrible corporation.
You work at the Black Mesa
research facility, and like a thing goes wrong, and basically a portal. To another dimension gets opened up.
And aliens invade.
Yeah.
But it's different than Portal where you're jumping through.
Yeah,
because
Portal actually got built because it was like a...
It's in the same universe, right?
Portal started
as a mod. It was like
a tech
demo for... Yeah, yeah.
Right? Wasn't the first Portal a mod?
I thought it was a tech demo.
On the Half-Life engine? Oh, I don't know. I don't remember.
Man, we should do some research on these things.
Yeah. But there's puzzles in it as well, right? It's not just
shooter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. it's a first person shooter at its core, but
right.
it's not as puzzly as Portal.
Yeah,
right, even right. close.
But it's just kind of like it's not like Doom. You know, like no. it's a smarter first yeah, person yeah. shooter because you kind of have to think about.
And the story what is doing. Just awesome. Like, put it this way, I played Half-Life 2 years ago. That's when I started Half-Life. It's not like I was OG and mm-hmm. playing it in 96. Like, I played it in 2009 and still loved the crap out of it. Okay. The story is awesome. So cool. Check that out.
Cool. Thank you for answering my question.
We did, right? I think we did.
Yeah.
I haven't been doing a lot. Watching a lot of Netflix still.
Loving our Netflix.
And Amazon and Hulu, for that matter. I watch mm-hmm. all of them. But I will out myself for something because I found out a movie got added to Amazon, the Prime Instant Watch.
What's that?
I don't know why I'm in love with this movie. It's not a good movie. It's just not. I know that.
But you love it.
Do you even know what I'm talking about yet?
You love it.
Do you know what movie I'm talking about? How? You didn't see me watch it. I watched this by myself in secrecy.
It's because I go to bed at like 9:30.
No, you were. I think you were working. Wow. But it's for setting. I'm going to say I think it's mostly for setting because uh-huh. I love New York so much. But You've Got Mail got added to Amazon Prime Instant Video.
What do you
like,
do?
And watched it, like it made some popcorn is. And just was like, oh, I love this movie.
It truly is one of Matt's favorites.
I don't know why it's so trashily bad. It's so bad.
I'm with you.
It's not bad.
It's kind of a bad it's, movie. It is. The more you watch it, you're like, this is not a good movie.
Like,
not,
but you get sucked in. Like,
yeah.
I wish I had a shop around the corner.
Oh, it's so
but
good.
You're not like a Sleepless in Seattle. No. You're like a
I don't give a
male.
Shit about Harry Met Sally or Sleepless in Seattle.
Well, Sleepless in Seattle is the same
movie,
right? Same two people.
Yeah,
it's not even jokingly different. It right. is literally almost the same exact movie.
Right? Maybe just they'll make a third city. One and just round out the trilogy.
Except they're what? They're phone buddies or something instead of email in Sleepless in Seattle.
Yeah, because
they're
was,
like pen pals or something. Yeah,
they got
no, it was a radio show.
Up on a radio show.
Radio show.
That's what it was. Yeah, yeah.
A little kid calls in and is like, "My dad."
I mean, and
a
not
date.
To disrespect Harry when Harry Met Sally. I realize that's like one of those like not first, but the one that everybody talks about. But for whatever reason, You've Got Mail.
Well, I will say I actually did watch the original that movie
yeah, you
is
did.
Based on,
Shop Around the Corner.
And it's really good. And it's still they stand alone. And there's parts of it that they actually line for line, like Dave Chappelle's lines in that movie are like exact. And wow. it's kind of awesome. And it's all like black and white movie, and it's great. I love it.
And
I
then
love
they
classics.
Do like a lot of like when the owner. The oldest guy at the Fox Books or whatever. Grandpa Fox or whatever. Mm-hmm. When he says, oh, Cecilia, that's the girl from Shop Around. That's from the 30s movie that they're referencing. Like they reference the actual 30s movie in the movie.
That's pretty crazy.
So, a little nod.
Little wink.
Little wink, wink,
little
nudge,
wink
nudge.
And nod.
Interesting.
So that's it. Just watching that and crying. No.
You just got like a bucket of bonbons and you're just...
curled up on the couch with the dog.
So we've got some news to do. We've got reviews of a new board game that I bought today. And also we went and saw three of us went and saw Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2. Let's kick it off with a break. We'll take like a 30-second break real quick, and then we'll jump into the news.
Okay.
Sweet.
Cue music.
We're back.
That Hello. Was an awesome break. I really like that music you just played right there.
Thanks.
Did you write that yourself?
With the help of GarageBand.
Awesome. Yay.
I think. Or it's Ryan's.
We'll see.
Clayton sent us music a long time ago and I totally lost it. So Clayton, if you're still listening to this podcast and not so mad that I didn't play one of your songs, I actually lost the CD that you gave to Ash.
What's his gamer tag?
Oh my God. Madryn.
Madryn. Yeah. Madryn. Mad Ran.
Lost it for a second there.
Mad Ran.
Yeah, but I need that music, Clayton. Give it to me. All right, so the first bit of news is something Amy found, actually, and sent it to me
actually,
this week.
Nathan Chase sent it to me.
He's
cool. The drummer from The Pauses.
Nathan is the drummer from The Pauses and made Flickster.
Yes.
Which is a cool... Or not Flick... Flick...
Chart.
Flickchart.
Flickster is another app.
It's totally different.
I do too many things on the internet. I'm sorry. He made Flickchart, which kind of became super popular when the Totally Rad Show guys, they use that for one of their game shows called Versus. And it's awesome. It's a cool app. You rate movies against each other, you know, and they're kind of randomly get generated. It's cool. So the first bit of news is there is a movie that got funded through Kickstarter, which made their pledge. It's only got 6 days to go. So actually, you might hear this podcast right when it's about to close, but you might not. The movie is called Indie Game the Movie. They made their pledge. They were looking for $35,000, and they got a good bit more than that.
I think this is near the end. They've already done
a lot. Yeah, they've got 6 days left. So.
No, I mean the production.
Yeah. I think they're actually just probably making their money back for time invested.
Right.
This is probably no small endeavor. But basically, it is a documentary by a team of two people. They're called Blinkworks, and it's James Sworsky and Lisa Ann. I just slaughtered that one. And her last name's not even easier. Padgett? Sure. For Blinkworks Media. But they went out and filmed this. The thing that caught our eye, Amy and I's eyes, is that it looks like a lot of this was shot at PAX East, the one we were just at.
Yeah.
Which is cool. And the film footage looks incredible. So we'll probably post this up on the site. But they've got the creators of Super Meat Boy. They've got, you saw a bunch of
them. I saw Braid in there, too.
Braid. Right. I think they've got some of them listed down at the bottom, but cool.
It seems pretty cool.
It looks pretty
awesome. I'm wondering how technical they're going to get. I mean, it's interesting to me to see what these guys have to go through. I mean, these are generally like one or two person teams getting these things put out.
And that's kind of what's interesting about it is the way that like people today experience most of these like big budget video games. And then you see the people that make these small indie games and they're like, they almost seem like tortured artists. You know what I mean? Like it's like a totally different...
Well, yeah, just from the trailer for the movie, they say, you know, I put my heart and soul in this. I take all my deepest, darkest secrets and put them into the character. Yeah. And
I don't know who it was, but one guy made the point. He was like, it's pretty much make or break. He's like, you know, because if this doesn't do anything, I just spent 2 years making something that
never goes
anywhere.
Well, he actually
says,
I will never do video games again. Yeah. Like, I'm just done.
Well, that's the great part about going to PAX is you get to see a lot of those guys and you get to talk to them. And like we talked to a guy that did the music for one game and it was like all the work that he and what the technical stuff that he went through to do a lot of that. So it's interesting. You get to talk a lot of.
Yeah. PAX
people.
Really does highlight the indie gamers really, really well. But yeah, I don't know. It looks really interesting. We'll post up the video on the site probably today or tomorrow just so other people can see it maybe before it's done getting funded. They've got some good package deals where you can get, you know, DVD and your name in the credits. And
I think even on the low end, you
t-shirts.
At least get a digital version.
I think if you spend $15, you get a digital version and your name in the credits.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool, you know?
Yep.
So, but we thought it was a cool thing. Amy showed it to me. The video is awesome. So definitely check it out. If you see this, go back to the site and look for the link. Or you can just go to Kickstarter and search for Indie Game the Movie. But it looks really awesome. So
documentaries are always kind of fascinating in certain ways, and I think this is like one of those kind of falls into that category of just like interesting portraits of individuals and kind of like how they live their lives, you know.
Yeah, and it's looking like they say here on early 2012 that we should be
cool.
They should be releasing something to the audience, so that is cool.
I like documentaries. We just watched one about dogs. It was pretty cool.
We did on Netflix.
This is a good segue.
We watched that on Netflix.
And speaking of Netflix.
Speaking of Netflix.
Oh, my God.
They put out a press release this week, which set the internet on fire.
They basically said, dear internet, we're going to realistically adjust our prices to reflect the current state of our business affairs and to bring you a better service.
Yeah. So basically what happened is Netflix... decided, okay, well, what we've got to do now to make this worthwhile or profitable for us is we no longer can charge you a special bonus price for having DVDs and streaming. We're splitting the two plans. If you want streaming, it's $7.99. If you want one DVD, it's $7.99. Or if you want two DVD or a Blu-ray, it's $9.99, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yep.
And two DVDs is staying the price of $11.99, right?
Yep.
So that's what they did. That is literally all that happened. They said, we're no longer doing specialized pricing. If you want DVDs, if you want streaming, you just pay for the two, whatever services you want, you just pay for as full price.
Which I think is a smart move, because you've got people who would rather see stuff streaming than get the discs.
What I watched happen in almost real time, because I was just kind of sitting at work, and I saw Engadget actually leaked the press release before Netflix put it out.
Mm-hmm.
Engadget was like, hey, there's new pricing coming from Netflix. We've got word. We don't know. We can't officially say what it is yet. We don't know. And it was like an hour later, Netflix released the pricing. And then everybody started freaking out and thinking that apparently Netflix charging $16 for two wonderful services is just the most ridiculous thing ever created, and started just losing their shit. I mean, losing it.
Sounds like entitlement is what it is.
You think
but
so?
Yeah. I think they were losing it for the wrong reason. It was like, well, I hate their streaming, so I'm going to drop DVDs.
Yeah. that was the reaction I saw most often. It was somebody going like, well, all I ever do with the DVDs is they just collect dust on my shelf, and their streaming service sucks, so I'm going to drop the DVDs and I'll just pay for streaming. And I'm like, you're not showing them anything at that point.
It's like you're dissatisfied with the selection on the streaming. Yeah. So I'm just going to drop the DVDs.
Because they're not watching it.
Keep the streaming.
And that's what killed me more often than that, is like people were complaining because they're not watching the DVDs. And basically,
but that's their fault.
Yeah. What Netflix did is go, hey, we can't make it so cheap that you don't even care that you're not watching the DVDs anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, we've got to charge you money for this stuff.
Right.
Well, and you said based on your research for it, because I know you were up late for your article on it, just doing all the research on the company.
Right. Pump me up.
You were legitimately researching numbers and company history and that
slaved
sort of thing.
You got references.
I was calling. I didn't call anybody.
You went
I
to
did
the library.
I read Microfiche.
No, oh, really? Yeah. Wow.
You went
oh
to
my
the
goodness.
You came down to the library.
Oh, you visited Amy?
No, I didn't. Who uses libraries anymore?
Oh my god.
We were actually watching Angel. This is totally sidetracked. On Netflix.
On Netflix.
That's how
streaming.
It relates.
You're
and,
streaming it.
They did all of their research in the library, and I was like, who goes to the library anymore?
Oh, my gosh. We actually have free DVDs. So.
There you go, Netflix. Suck it.
I'm going to subscribe to the library.
Which
you don't have
is
to pay
free.
Anything. So.
Anyways.
Do they still deliver them?
We don't need
they
to bag on the library.
No. Send stuff to your house, right?
I'm just joking.
Well, they deliver books, but not DVDs anymore.
Nice. But yeah, you were inflating my ego.
You are so awesome, and you were like researching and.
But yeah, basically, I was looking into it.
But you were looking at their numbers and.
They got total revenue somewhere around $2.6 billion last year, 2010. They had 20.1 million subscribers. They made $2.6 billion in revenue. Revenue does not include costs. So while that sounds great, their costs were somewhere in like the $1.8 billion costs.
Like, not a stellar bottom line.
No, yeah. That is a huge reduction in costs. So they basically said, and then on top of that, this year they've already released that they're dumping somewhere in the range of $300 to $400 million into content development.
Right.
So new content for streaming, quicker content for streaming, all that kind of stuff. They're dumping money into it because they have no other way to get it right now. So with that in mind.
If numbers were
to not change, their bottom line is getting small quick. And it's been said from the beginning when Netflix came out, especially when they started doing streaming, there were other business analysts that came out and they're like, this model is unsustainable at the one that they're at. Like, because shipping costs are going to continue to increase.
Right.
Bandwidth costs are going to continue to increase. All of these things are going to continue to increase. And you've got a price line that's so, you know, bottom of the basement, it can't go anywhere. You know,
right.
And then it goes to show that it was so bottom of the basement that I think people were devaluing the service in their heads. So when all of a sudden Netflix is like, hey, we're worth it. We're worth $16. Everybody freaks out like $6 is the end of the world.
We talked about this. I was saying that, you know, like, I don't know about you, but the disc that I have at home generally sits at home for about a month. And if that is now $10, like, even if you do drop that, you know, you could just go buy a DVD for $10 and then watch it and throw it in the garbage when you're
done.
You
can't buy a Blu-ray for $10.
No, you can't. But you could probably get, you know, like reasonably on sale, you could get it for like $15.
But I think also countering that, like having said that, if I know I'm actually paying a little bit more for something to have it, I'm going to use
it.
I might actually start watching the DVDs that are sitting on top of my TV forever. Because we have an awesome tube TV.
Sweet.
And we have space on top.
The other thing is their customer service has never been. I mean, like, you get a scratch disc and like almost the next day you get
and that and
it's like,
and streaming. People
why
complain
are people
about
complaining?
People complain about the streaming and they say like every once in a while it cuts out and stuff. And it blows my mind because I want to be like, you know how many people are in between Netflix sending the stuff to you receiving it on your TV? There's your router, your modem, the cable company, Netflix's service provider. But beyond that,
your neighbor.
They're servicing 30, like, and this was in the article too. They account for 30% of all bandwidth during prime time.
Peak hours. Wow.
Peak hours. So peak
hours.
I don't
know what that means.
So bandwidth is like what you'd use to move data around the internet.
Like data transmission over the intertubes.
So if you think that in North America, 30% of all internet traffic,
from
everything.
5 to 9?
From, sure, 5 to 9 or 4 to 7 or whatever the peak hours might be considered, is Netflix alone.
Oh, wow.
Nothing
That's a
else.
Lot.
Nothing else.
The other 70% is porn.
The other, I mean,
and 30%
like 69%.
69%
is porn, and then 1% Google searches for valid things.
Yep, that sounds about right. Science.
30% though. I mean, that is an insane amount of data to be moving around, and on top of that, it's all coming from one service. They have to, like, I feel like people don't realize that Netflix is like paying for things to make that happen. Like. Right. They have data centers all over the country. They have fiber cable they've paid for. They've probably laid it themselves. Like, they have people monitoring networks and servers that are monitoring traffic.
They also have excellent customer service.
It just
by phone as well.
It
which
just
is
blows my mind that it's like it went up $6. Mind you, the total increase for the year is like a video game.
Yep.
One.
Yeah.
So all of the TV you may watch or all of the DVDs you may watch in a year
That's
is
like,
one video game that you could buy.
Well, not only that, but it's like the same price as like a value menu lunch. Like,
you're not going to buy a Frappuccino this month.
Oh.
Sorry.
It doesn't even add up to what you would pay for 1 month of cable.
No.
You know, like 1 month of like full cable
service. Yeah, I mean, it's like...
Over the year. Over
and,
the course
and I
of
went through
year.
Those numbers too, and I kind of conservatively... talked about how much I spent on cable and what I spent now on Netflix and Hulu combined. And it's just like it, I agree. I think it's entitlement and it just blows my mind that that was the reaction that came out. Not like, oh, hey, Netflix is being reasonable. We're going to all pay that. And then they also sent out an email that said, hey, you've been a customer for a long time. We're very appreciative of that, but we have to, we're not doing special pricing anymore. So, based on your plans, your price will go from this to this.
Yeah, they let you know.
If you're not okay with that, you can cancel whatever you want at any time. Just go online and go ahead and cancel it. If you don't like the service at all and you don't feel like this is worth it, cancel it entirely. Like, we're okay with that. Just click here. You can cancel your entire account. And I'm
you don't have to pay a penalty?
I know. Like, it's like, if I called Bright House and was like,
no
hey,
contract.
I don't need cable anymore. They're like, oh, you sure?
Yeah.
I'm like,
yeah,
no, I'm pretty sure I don't need cable. Well, you got to do this, and then you got to bring us the boxes. And it's like,
we're only going to call you at dinner time for the next 5 days just to make sure.
Just make sure
we have a special bundle
anymore.
Picked out just for you.
So it blew me away. The reaction kind of blew me away. And I know I've been kind of over talking everybody, but did you guys see the same kind of thing? Do you feel the same way that I kind of felt with the article I wrote?
Do you think this is just typical like internet reaction? Yeah, like we need to say something, so we're going to type.
It's been 3 days, and I don't think anyone's talked about it since.
Yeah.
Right.
It's Saturday. You know, this happened on Wednesday, and literally it's already calmed down to a low, you know,
murmur. I think the internet will recover from this. I'm fairly certain.
I mean, it seems like such a pointless like discussion. Like so it's going up. Like my tuition's also going up this semester. Like there's not a big, you know, there's like, oh, well, gas goes up every day and are we going to like, ride the wambulance every day it happens.
And I think like you pointed out in the article, this is the first time there's been
a price hike. They did a price hike about 6 months ago or 12 months ago, somewhere in there, when they officially added the streaming. Okay. And it went from $7.99 to, hold your breath, guys, $9.99 a month.
Oh, my Lord.
To get a DVD and streaming. And this is the first actual major price hike since almost 1998.
Yeah.
The service started out, it was $4.99 per DVD in the mail. And then they said, it's not a great price range. Like people, it's basically what you were paying at Blockbuster still at that point. So they introduced this, I think in like 2003 they introduced, or not even, I think it was right away, like in 2000, they introduced unlimited DVDs to your house, and I want to say it was $5.99. So in 12 years, their pricing has gone from $5.99 to $7.99.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. That's a lot.
I mean, it's like, it kills me that this service does like that. Because it would be different if that number wasn't 30%, if they weren't accounting for 30% of all traffic, I could see people being like, well, why would I pay that? Like, but the numbers show that you're paying it because you're using it and heavily, like in crazy amounts.
Well, the argument was also made that Netflix announced the price change, but didn't also simultaneously announce, like, we're bringing you this today and we're increasing the prices.
Right. And here's the thing, though. They're not changing the prices today unless you're a new customer. If you're existing, they're not changing them until September.
Yeah, but we're talking about...
People who have attention spans of 5 minutes.
Individuals are smart, but people are not smart. Right. You know?
And like, so there's that. And then there's the fact that, and maybe I feel like they didn't PR the new content thing enough. I feel like the fact that there is a exclusive David Fincher, or not David Fincher.
Barack Obama.
Studio 60. What's his name?
Aaron Sorkin.
There's an exclusive Sorkin show coming to Netflix.
Awesome.
It's already been purchased.
Wow.
It was a big deal. The rumor was that they spent $100 million on it, but the more realistic number is somewhere between $2 to $4 million per episode, which could be close to $100 million, but maybe not.
The big question is, how do we get TNT, TBS, and FX?
I mean, I'm not here to solve that problem. HBO, TBS, TNT all need to figure out how to get their damn content off of the fucking cable companies, and the NFL, for that matter, if you're listening, NFL.
We love you, football.
And speaking of TNT... We went to the movie theater last night.
Boom!
And if you caught, well, I was going to say if you caught the 20.
it was a Closer and,
Rizzoli. Rizzoli and Isles. Is that what we're talking about?
I don't think
trailers?
Those were the trailer recaps
You don't want to talk about the trailers during the 20?
No, I don't know that a Rizzoli and Isles commercial
I'm sorry. I think it's called Regal First Look now.
Yeah, Regal. It's not the 20 anymore.
Is the 20 from, is that like an AMC thing?
No,
it was Regal.
It was Regal, yeah.
It was the 20.
Okay.
Yeah. So out of four of us went to see Harry Potter.
Amy. Yes, but I'm going to go see it Tuesday. So.
So you're okay with talking about the trailers? We can cut this now.
I'm pretty sure I'm probably going to see different trailers because I'm going to IMAX.
They're not really, there's not much to talk about, to be honest. But
okay.
We'll,
yeah.
I think there's one that Melissa's really excited about, and that's about the only thing that she really wants. That's why
Happy
she put this
Feet
on the list.
2!
Yeah, we're going to ruin Happy Feet 2 for you.
That's all right. I'm good.
Happy Feet 2. What was the other one? There was
There were so many animated children's.
And by the way, they made the joke in the trailer, Two Happy Feet, right. And then they flipped it, and they're like, Happy Feet 2? And I was like, no, Two Happy Feet was a lot more, funnier and wittier than Happy Feet 2.
Yes.
Like, why wouldn't you leave it as Two Happy Feet? Yeah. Like, movie people.
Because it doesn't file well in the when it gets to the store.
Yeah, because you wouldn't find Happy Feet.
Yeah.
Stupid ass.
How would the library file that?
Yeah, it'd be totally different sections.
C?
Be under T.
Under T.
Yeah.
Melissa was attempting a callback there.
No, I know. I caught it. I'm dialed in.
Thanks.
So, Sherlock Holmes. Just go ahead. That's the one you want to talk about.
Yeah, because I like Robert Downey Jr.
Did you actually see anything in that trailer?
I saw a lot of moving. I saw Robert Downey Jr. in blue eyeliner.
Oh.
In drag.
Yes.
Wow.
Well, I mean, it was like the first Sherlock Holmes movie. There was like a lot of fast action and then a pause and slow action, which fast forwards into fast action
and
again.
Hey, well, jokes.
It's Guy Ritchie again.
Exactly. It's like, oh, this is happening. So let's slow it down, analyze it,
cool.
And then speed it back up.
I really
like cool.
I really liked the first movie. I think I saw it like twice.
Watched it recently. Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet.
From our Netflix DVD service.
We did.
It's a good. It's like a good popcorn action.
Oh yeah,
like,
totally.
I
enjoyable.
Enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a
but
lot.
But not to the point of being like moronic. Like you're not sitting there watching like, oh, there's action. You know. Like it actually is.
It's good.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
No, it is. It's good. I like how they did the fights. I liked how they did the action scenes. Mm-hmm. You know, the slowdown thing.
Well, they anatomically break it down as to like what happens when he's going to like punch him in the jaw.
I think that's that Guy Ritchie thing.
It's Guy Ritchie. Yeah. That's totally Guy Ritchie. I think the biggest reveal in this trailer was Moriarty.
Yeah.
Probably.
Absolutely.
Who they actually showed.
Was he not in the... I mean, he was...
He was rumored in the first one, but he wasn't like ever... there Like, he didn't show up in the movie.
Which is kind of interesting, too, because Matt and I also, on Netflix, started watching. This is sponsored by.
Hey, they should be listening.
I know.
I scooped Fast Company with that story. P.S.
What does that mean?
I mean, I wrote that article on the
site. Oh, no, it's true.
And Fast Company wrote it a day later. That's like, true. The same article. I was like, yeah, Fast Company.
I got him.
I got him.
No, but we've also been watching.
I thought it first. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
We started watching. We started watching the BBC show.
Sure. Oh, Sherlock. I wanted to see that. It's so good.
Fantastic.
It's okay. So good.
Cool. Not to be a huge nerd, but in my headspace, I get like Sherlock Holmes, like this, you know, the movie version Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
Confused now with the lore of Sanctuary on Sci-Fi, because
I don't watch Sanctuary.
Nobody watches Sanctuary. No. Okay,
we don't have cable.
Well, Sanctuary is on.
It's on Hulu.
It's on Hulu.
I will watch it for you.
I don't. It's kind of like on a rotating 5-episode kind of thing. Yeah. But mm-hmm. like, if you could, I think the first season or two is on Netflix. But sort of the lore of the show is that the person that runs the Sanctuary, Helen Magnus, has lived for a very long time, and she has known like popular figures from history like Sherlock Holmes and Jack the Ripper and stuff like that. So like they kind of tie all that lore into this show, and it's like it's kind of hokey, but it's
that's
fun.
Cool.
It's fun to watch. So like now I'm having like worlds like melting together.
Well, right, I feel like, well, and just talking about like television shows and books into whatever. Mm-hmm. But both NBC and ABC are doing those two, like the Grimm
and
fairy tales, or
it's the one about the city, the person that the family that goes to the city, and when they go to sleep at night,
we just talked about this.
Yeah, they go to like a fairy tale, and when they wake up in the morning, it's like normal.
It's not
life.
Called fairy tales though.
I don't know. I could look it
talking.
Up.
Oh, is it the one that's based on the? Or it looks like it's based on the comic Fables?
It the...
Is it kind of like ripping it off or something?
Once Upon a Time.
Fairy Tales.
It's not based on Fables,
no,
is it?
No, but I think it's kind of got the same concept as Fables.
Like art direction, you mean? Or
story.
I think story-wise, yeah.
I think they kind of...
Oh, the rap on Once Upon a Time is that it's going to be like a television version of Fables. In which fairy tale characters come to our world and live among us.
Yeah,
job,
I mean,
Amy.
That's what
Boom.
Fables is
Boom.
About.
And that's why you're here.
the other big trailer was Dark Knight Rises. Which showed clips from the other Batman movies.
Yeah.
It's a movie.
And just showed, it didn't show anything.
Yeah.
Wow.
No, you saw an over-the-shoulder shot of Bane.
Who's Bane? He's the big
yes.
dude? Okay.
And I actually have to say, after seeing that trailer, which I held off of because it leaked online, I was like, no, I'll wait, because I'm going to see it in the theater. I think Ash is right.
What? About what?
It's going to be the Batman gets his back broken story.
Oh, I don't know. So you're like...
Well, it says in the end of the trilogy.
Well, this...
I
mean, it's regardless of what... I mean, Batman could murder the whole world. It would still be the end of Nolan's Batman. Like, Nolan's done after this movie.
Oh,
so.
Wow.
They'll just they'll reboot Batman. And
so is that? On. I mean, I'm not a comic book guy. So
it's
a,
the one. It
is
was
that
Batman.
A good, I mean, is it a good story?
It was
really?
Batman 499. I want to say, and like it's where Bane is like this uber gangster, and he breaks Batman's back. It's the beginning of like Batman not being Bruce Wayne anymore.
What I'm sorry,
which has changed
also,
is Bruce Wayne again. Don't worry about the history of all that stuff.
I just wanted to ask, did something happen in the second one that Commissioner Gordon was in the hospital?
No.
So that whole trailer, I was like, "Why? What happened to Commissioner Gordon?" Like,
I mean,
why
not that
he...
I remember. At the end of the movie, he was fine. They
I mean, the whole
they
trailer
him going to the hospital, but he didn't actually.
Because the whole trailer is him talking from a hospital bed.
In the second one, they fake his death essentially, that he got shot, and then he ends up being one of the cops with the helmet on to get to the Joker.
Oh,
and they catch him, and then the Joker.
Wasn't there like a Two-Face or something?
Yeah, but Two-Face, that's who was in the hospital, not Gordon.
I don't know.
Yeah, I was a little lost.
You know what?
And then Jack and Kate have
Amy,
to go
just
back.
You and I will
in
talk
time,
about this.
And then
okay.
Comic books.
Yes. I know things about comic books.
You don't read Batman though.
No. Well.
You might start.
Well,
the 52.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to. Yeah. Hi.
I want to read Super Dinosaur.
Sorry, everyone listening to the podcast. All four of us just laughed at the same time.
There was, before we move off this topic, there was a trailer actually during the Regal first look that I did think was actually interesting, and that
was the TV show,
the one for Terra Nova.
Yeah. It still looks good.
I never actually watched any like material for Terra Nova, and now that I see it, like there are people behind us that are like, "Oh, this is like Avatar meets Jurassic Park." Man, I was like,
everybody says Avatar because the dude from Avatar's in it. Well, the moment that guy shows up, they're like, "Oh, it's Avatar," and I'm like, "It has nothing to do with Avatar. It's just the same guy. They can be in two different properties."
Yeah,
Avatar is about raping Fern Gully from the blue aliens and. This show is about traveling to prehistoric times and killing dinosaurs.
The first, you know what my thought was when I saw this trailer? It's like, they're like, our world is destroyed, so we traveled back in time to start anew. And in my head, I was like, so you're just going to destroy the world like
before you even get to it.
80 million years earlier. You know,
but I feel like the movie, or first of all, it looks movie quality. It looks that good. And B, I don't think that's the point. I think that... I don't know, whatever.
I was more stoked that Jason O'Hara was. I didn't know he was in the. Because I really liked Life on Mars when that got canceled.
He's the dad, right?
He's the cop. You know.
Oh, yeah.
Remember when you played the crazy cop?
The crazy cop. That was a variety.
Yeah. Shout out.
That's the state, everybody. If you were a boy and lived in the 90s, you would have watched that show.
Yeah. maybe Tom Lennon is listening right now.
I don't think so.
Okay,
but if you are Tom, we're fans of yours.
Yep. Let's get that on Hulu. Please.
We don't need anything from you, but thank you for existing. I think that's the end of the news. Is it? Are we done? What is happening?
Yeah, no, that was the news.
Okay, we're gonna take a break. We'll come back. We'll review. Amy will question us about Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2. Then we will talk about our experience with the new board game Space Alert.
Space Alert.
Neat.
We're back.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
So we have a review for Harry Potter.
Yeah.
And the Deathly Hallows Part 2.
These are fun reviews because nothing we say is going to dissuade somebody from seeing this movie.
What was it? $92.1
million Ash tweeted today.
In 2 days?
In one day.
One day.
Oh,
I guess
first day earnings. Midnight to midnight.
Movie.
Midnight to midnight, $92.1 million.
Record-breaking.
Awesome. Record-breaking first day.
Woohoo.
I can say it was friggin' packed at ours.
Yeah,
I'm sure every.
I think that kid's got a future, that Daniel Radcliffe. I think he's going to go places.
I think that Emma Watson might be all right, too.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of, one more trailer that was absolutely confusing.
Doing the trailers.
I know, but I just want to say the other only trailer that they showed, and everyone in the entire audience was like, "What is this?" It was War Horse.
It's a Steven Spielberg film, I think, about a horse.
Look it up, because I'm almost positive
it was like a 3 minute trailer that just. Showed a horse. There was no talking.
It looked like the lifetime of like maybe a kid and a horse.
But I'm almost positive it's based on the Broadway play or musical
Book of
right
Mormon?
Now.
There is a
no,
play.
No, called War Horse. It's called War Horse.
Can we reserve that as a band name? War Horse? That's kind of awesome.
Yeah.
That is pretty awesome.
It is a Broadway play.
Thank
you are correct.
I know.
I don't believe it's.
They have a but on
what
Broadway they have like a
was,
mechanical
though,
horse.
But what you said to me was, that's the one starring Daniel Radcliffe.
I got it confused.
And I looked
at
you and I was like, no,
that's like
not
Death
that's
of a
Equus,
Salesman, right?
Yeah. Well,
no,
not Death of a Equus.
Equus is a
which sounds like
it's
equestrian.
Where he got naked in.
No,
well, that's what I was like.
There's a horse in it.
You're not talking about the one he's in now. The one he was.
Yes,
yeah, yeah. The
correct.
One he was in, and there was a horse in it.
Yeah.
I agreed with you.
No,
but that's why I said to you, no, that's not the same thing.
Right, but I was referring to the one with the big mechanical horse that they have on.
It's at the Lincoln Center Theater right now.
Thank you. See, I was right.
I was
now they're Steven Spielberg.
How to succeed in business without.
What I would like you to know is that. Melissa wasn't wrong.
Which is true. I'm never wrong. Even when I am wrong, I just mean that I'm right about something else.
So Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2 is the second part to the Deathly Hallows Part 1.
Get out.
I'm serious. And
shut the front door.
And the very last movie.
It's the last movie ever for Harry Potter.
Ever.
Supposedly. I mean, unless she writes some weird new Harry Potter book.
Oh, she's got the website.
Pottermore.
And it follows Harry basically going after the last three Horcruxes to destroy them to ultimately kill Voldemort.
Neat.
I mean, if you've read the books, there's not much we can say. If you haven't read the books, there's a lot we could say that could ruin the movie. So we're going to try and be as spoiler-free as we possibly can, like we did in the review earlier today. I would rather get a little more technical, maybe, in this review than we did in the written one.
Because
the written one, I kind of felt the written one, I really felt like, you know, you can't review this movie.
Nope.
On its own, like you just kind of can't. It's not a part really two. A movie. It's like it's half of a movie.
Right. It's a continuation.
Whereas the first one, you know, we felt like it was half a movie, but it could have like was a resolution there, it could have ended, and we probably would have all been like, oh, okay, cool. That was a movie. Yep. You know, this one literally
starts. Let's go.
It picks up right after the trailers.
Okay. It is like we're moving. Like it's awesome. It just rolls in.
Stuff is happening. Like right
there's
away.
There's no intro.
No.
Did they do an intro at all?
There was a WB, and then there was the Harry Potter.
No, that's not how it started, though.
No. The very first scene is the...
The very first scene just starts. It's like, literally, nice. A preview ends, and it fades into
a
scene.
It's Dumbledore's tomb is the very first thing you see, and it's kind of... It's
It's Harry at the beach, isn't it? Or no, it's Dumbledore's tomb.
Thank you. I'm right.
Oh, my God. We're not doing that through the whole interview.
Well, we're trying not to give parts away. That's why we were talking about it non-specifically.
But that's what ends it in part one. That's
no,
the very
she's
last
right. thing. I mean, that's where it starts.
I'm not giving it away. I'm just saying that that's...
Dumbledore's dead, Scott.
Yeah, I know.
we saw that in the last movie.
Right.
No, this is awkwardly tense now. I don't know what we're talking about.
No, we're fine.
So we can go around the room real quick, and then Amy can ask some questions.
Awesome. Sure.
Sound good?
Are we talking about like impressions or?
Yeah, just like I think you can be a little technical on this one as far as like, you want me to start? You want me to lead this off?
Yeah, go ahead.
It's good. You know, I mean, it's Harry Potter. It's good. It looks good. It's directed by the same guy who did Order of the Phoenix, Half-Blood Prince, and the first part of this one. Same director all the way through the last three movies or four movies.
Right.
Like I said, looks phenomenal, acted extremely well. These guys have gotten so much better each movie goes on. It's unbelievable to watch them act now. I feel like they just live in this universe almost when I'm watching it. It's not even questioned, you know. There's some weird beats. There's some weird, like, just odd feeling things that happen in the movie that kind of throw me out a little. There's some weird direction choices.
Okay.
I will say David Yates is not my number one director from Harry Potter.
Well, he really hasn't done anything.
He hasn't.
I mean, this is his jumping point.
Yeah,
like
the first, he did Order of the Phoenix, and other than, I think, some BBC shows, that was pretty much his first major direction.
Not bad.
But Order of the Phoenix, I thought, was a phenomenal movie. Right. I thought number five was really good. This one just felt, it just felt weird. I almost wish the theater had offered to just be like, marathon session of part one and part two, like, you
know,
some
theaters did that,
take a coffee break and then go back and sit down. I probably would have done it, but yeah.
Well, and Scott, you watched it prior. You watched it like before dinner, before we went.
Yeah, before dinner we watched the first part and then went to dinner and then watched the second part in the theater.
There's some weird changes from the book, which the more Melissa and I have talked about, I think it's because they didn't address some of the same stuff in the earlier movies.
And see, I have noticed that from the beginning. There are certain topics that they didn't bring up, and they can't just introduce those.
So they just don't. So they kind of write around them. They kind of just made like ways to make it work around them. And I think that was maybe somewhat to its detriment. It's really hard to say because, to be dead honest, I don't know that I was super enthralled with the ending in the book. I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. I just was kind of like, well, it's over now. And like, I watched the movie and kind of walked away with the same feeling. So,
well, okay. You read the book.
We all did.
Everybody's read the book. Okay.
So, I think that's kind of where I'll leave it. I think if you've watched them at this point, like, you've got to go see, I mean, it's ridiculous if you don't go see this movie. If the point I made in the written review is that if you haven't watched any of them and you've kind of held off for whatever reason, you know, maybe fear over ending or something like that. It's not like they crap on the ending. It's not like all of a sudden, you know.
Right. They don't
like
change
Harry,
it.
Harry, like, you know, becomes Voldemort or something like crazy ridiculous. Like nothing, right. Nothing stupid happens. It's just.
If there's slight things that. But we talked about earlier today, it was because they left certain things out right. of previous movies that they couldn't
I just
go
mean
back
they
and
did,
address.
They didn't piss all over the ending to where you'd be mad at the series for ending the way it did. I think it was a good take. I'm glad they split these movies up into two movies.
I kind of wish they would have split it into three just because there's
almost,
so
yeah,
much
there's so
stuff.
Much that happens.
The book is huge. But then again, like most of the book is like
the only other
the traveling.
The only right. other negative thing that I didn't like, and I want to say this is a product of David Yates, of the director, is they don't cast spells. They just immediately shoot them out of their wands.
Pew, pew, pew.
It's like a laser gun. And I don't know that I'm like, that doesn't seem epic to me when you're just like, pew, 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 pew. And then just like running away. Like there's nobody saying anything. There's nothing like,
right.
like in the earlier ones, like in 4 and all that, there's like these massive battles with like things happening and people announcing spells and stuff's flying and breaking. And I just feel like this one was like the epic battles were epic and they looked cool, but they were such a backdrop item and they were so not really shown.
Yeah.
That
to counter that though, anybody that is kind of like knowledgeable in like magical lore and any other, you know what I mean? Like any other like story that
Melissa's a wizard.
I am. I'm actually a squib, but it's all right. Like in any other story or any other universe of magical people and wizards and witchcraft, it is like the magic within you that casts the magic.
But where that works in a book, it just looks like people shooting pellets out of a wand in a movie.
But I think because we've spent 10 years,
right.
you know, plus in this magical world or wizarding world of Harry Potter, it's we just kind of know it by this point and we
no,
accept
I agree.
It.
I'm not saying that. I'm not like questioning the technical merit of whether a wizard can shoot a spell out of his
well,
wand without saying words.
They do mention
words.
In the book that one of the skills a wizard learns as he gets older
right.
is to cast spells without
I'm
saying
I'm just
them.
Saying that when I'm watching a movie about wizards, which is what I'm doing, I'm not actually living in the wizarding world of Harry Potter. It does not translate to me as a big epic battle. It translates to me as shooting fluffs of dust out of a wand at somebody else that eventually somehow connects with them.
I think the point that Matt is making is that there were a few points in the movie where wizards would just hold their wands up and there would be like almost like Morse code shooting out of the wand. And it's like without even like no gusto of the wrist or anything like that. It's just kind of like flowing out of the wand.
Hmm.
And it's kind of weird, you know?
So moving on, Scott.
After reading some of what Ash wrote, I kind of I'll back up a little bit. My impression of this was, I think I set the bar so high after reading the book because in my head,
right.
like what I made this movie out to be, like was something that was unattainable, you know, in terms of like the epic scale of the battle and sort of like all of the factions that take place, or that take part of the battle in the book. You know, I feel like there could have been more of that. I suppose I feel like the journey that they went on felt a little more harder to like accomplish in the book, you know, but the movie is only so long. You have to do certain things, mm-hmm. kind of move the story along. But, I know that that's something that I'm doing and I can't really like impose that on the movie. So
I agree though, completely. I wanted that big epic Lord of the Rings ending.
Well, I mean, you remember what the original promo posters for the movie was, it was like the whole school like on fire and it was like, mm-hmm. it all ends and you're like, yeah, this is going to happen.
But the recent promos are Harry's face and Voldemort's
face.
Oh,
yeah.
And that's it.
So like I was like, this is going to happen. You know, this is going to be like epic, like crumbling fires, like people getting like hit in the face, you know, like you get some of that. But anyways, the point was, and what I kind of got from Ash's article was the fact that it's also a pretty impressive feat that they were able to keep the cast together the whole time and like kind of get through these like 8 movies without really like tanking the series or like, you know,
switching
like
out.
You know, like, oh, you know, Weasley leaves and they replace him with Carrot Top or something, you know,
right.
like, nothing like
I mean,
that happened.
They made the point on Totally Rad Show, is this the first movie to go 8 parts with the same cast and all the same storyline and all the same. Like, I mean, the only thing that changed out was the director.
What about those? I don't follow the Twilight stuff. But
those are four, right?
But that's, yeah, it's three. Only four total. I think three books and
quite
four
possibly
movies.
The first one to do that.
I mean, that. I
this
mean,
is eight movies.
It's an impressive feat that, like, for the most part, everything has been consistent throughout the whole sort of movie franchise.
With the exception of Dumbledore, who dies.
Right, but that's.
In real life.
Yeah.
Like, who, like, the actor physically dies.
Right.
Right.
So, I mean, I think that's really impressive. And then all that being said, I know that I'm only doing this because of what the movie is. Like, if you went and saw this movie in the theater, not, like, and there were no books, or you'd be like, this is the best movie I've ever, you know, like, this is the best movie I've ever seen.
And see, I think that's going to be Jason's reaction because he hasn't read any of the books.
Well, I'm curious because
he likes the movies.
Yeah, well, Jen hasn't read the books yet either.
Yeah, but she was just kind of like, I liked it. And then she asked me a couple of questions about like stuff that happened in the movie, like that was probably in the book. And I just was like, yep.
Expanded.
Yeah, I explained and she was like, cool. I mean, she was tired by that point. But I think she'll go back and read the books too. But I mean, overall, it's really impressive. Like, again, not my choice for the director or whatever.
Yeah.
Alfonso Cuarón. Yeah. I mean, like,
I did like he
did Prisoner.
I think Prisoner is still
that was my favorite book. Yes. Like,
by
like,
far.
I love that
yeah.
One.
Like the cinematic quality.
I think Order of the Phoenix was my favorite book. But Prisoner of Azkaban was by far my favorite movie. That was like just unreal.
And I guess the thing, I mean, like, this movie obviously has lots of emotion in it, and you're kind of like, you're still at the edge of your seat the whole time. Like, you're still tense, even though you know it's going to happen. But like, as far as like emotion goes, I was really like, I feel like the most sort of like emotional point for me over the entire set of eight films is when Cedric dies. Cause of like, the way the father comes out and he's like screaming.
We actually talked about that. We think that's one of the biggest feats of this series is teaching kids how to handle death.
Yeah.
Like good people God. Die. Oh,
yeah. It's the whole book. It's like,
it's every book.
It's
just
like
about
reality. I mean, you,
right. Your
dead
friends
is dead. Like people don't come back from being dead.
Yeah. And it's pretty amazing how well she.
Well, and to watch children actually grow up with these books and realize like this is real. Like,
right.
You know, as far as their relationships of being in school and having boyfriends and girlfriends. Yeah, yeah. And I mean, that's very, very, very real to a lot of people.
And I think to note on that, your feeling of emotion, I think part of that has to do with the fact that we're watching a disjointed second and third act. And it's weird to jump into a movie halfway through a second act, watch the third act, and then be like, I just don't feel that connected. Because you didn't watch the first act, which is like what built all of this up. I mean, remember, do you remember talking when we reviewed the first movie, in Crit, which we actually did on this show?
It was very emotional.
We were all talking about how like we were in the forest, everybody's gripped and just like watching this thing because you're watching the building part. All we did was watch half of a second act and a conclusion.
It's kind of you forget you watch 2 hours of them traveling. And
I mean,
and sleeping
that was like
snow
with like emotion.
Because that
like,
was the struggle.
That was
that
the
part
struggle.
Was the struggle, yeah.
And this part was more like he knew what he had to do and he just had to do it, you know, to like get those last Horcruxes and stuff.
I hope that when, and I'm sure they will, but I hope this is released as a whole movie, like on disc.
Yeah.
When it comes out, just like
I'm
a
sure
5 hour
special edition.
Like
They've got to release that trunk
Blu-ray.
Again for the seventh time.
Yeah. Like well, a 5 hour Blu-ray disc, I think is what, no, they put out special.
Somebody put out a thing on the internet that had yet again another box set of the movies with 1 through 7.1, and they were like, who is buying this? Yeah. Like, just wait 6 months.
I know,
they are releasing now book-sized packages of each film
of
for
each
about
one.
$40 a piece. Yeah. I think at this point, with a bunch of like it all unfolds.
They will sell that thing. It's Star Wars. That's why I said this is truly the Star Wars.
That's why it took me so long to read the books, because I was worried that it was going to become one of those things where it's like, you know, 10 different editions of the same book, and I didn't know which one.
Well, I mean, I think they're going to, that will happen. Like, they're going to sell this movie 400 times in every single thing they can sell it in. But I think the difference between this and Star Wars is that I do feel like this is a little more finite, and that we're not going to see prequels come out that piss all over the thing.
Luckily,
that you
I
loved
only
already,
care about
you know?
The films and like the special features. I just want to see the movies.
Well, it's because she kind of created this entire world with the prequel. She already knows. I mean, she knows the history of every single character.
She has charts.
Yeah.
So like, before Melissa begins, I want to preface this with the fact that there was probably a 3-year period of my life with Melissa where she read the Harry Potter lexicon every day online, like anything, just like not even, you can't even read the Harry Potter lexicon, by the way. I don't know if anybody knows what that is, but it's basically a Wikipedia of Harry Potter.
Well, there's a Harry Potter wiki also, but right. This is more of like an index.
She's just on it every day reading it. She is probably the biggest fan I know, but I know a couple other people that are massive fans
of the
Harry Potter universe.
It's not even.
She also can't read books. And this is the only series I've ever seen her read cover to cover, like every time a book comes out.
So you're going to probably follow the Pottermore, which is going to give you backstory to everything.
She's already written 800 words or 800 pages worth of stuff. And
800 words. I wrote 800 words.
8,000 words or whatever it is. I don't know. But she, like, just knowing that there's more material out there, like on the backstory of Neville and you know, the backstory of, you know, the Potter lineage, you know, like I just, all of that is, and to say that I'm a fan, I'm a huge fan, but I think I secretly believe that I am a part of that world.
Right.
There is a lot of story that is like sort of left untold.
Well,
you know? In the movie.
Well,
no, I mean like even in the books.
In the books too. Neville is a blonde.
Well, I mean,
and it never says it in the books, and it never says it, but on, she has come out and said, well, yes, Neville is blonde.
Oh, well, I just kind of meant like, you know,
Harry Scott wasn't as worried about hair color.
I just kind of meant that like these books are sort of the story of Harry Potter.
So you never really thought about whether Neville was a blonde?
No, not really. Mm.
Like I've looked at the black family tree, like probably 8 or 9.
Are you so racist?
The black family.
I just kind of meant that like,
yeah, she has stories for each of those characters.
In this world, there are more stories to be told. That's
right. she truly is the J.R. Tolkien of our J.R.R. Tolkien. What did I? Yeah. Is that,
I'll let you sit on this one.
She's the Tolkien of our.
Anything suspicious about them, like having to wear something around their necks and it makes them angry for a whole film?
But there's a difference to me, though, because Tolkien's books, I'm sorry, and I'm going to totally ruin some nerd cred, art. Effing impossible to read. I've tried to read them on multiple occasions.
Oh, I just saw the movies. I don't know.
Dude, they are like painstaking books to read. It's like,
well, because he made up his own language and his own written.
He sure did, and he loves it. He loves it.
It's
the
very
same as
difficult.
Reading, line after line of Portuguese Orson Scott Card's books.
Yeah. And I think the Game of Thrones series is kind of like. That's
why I won't get into it.
But it's actually, for me, it's a lot easier. Like,
is it?
It's a lot more interesting, like, because you get these different perspectives.
There's no
characters.
Real. We're going to get off track, but.
Yeah, sorry.
Just real quick, I just want to know, is there fantasy to Game of Thrones, though, or is it more just politics and, like.
There is an element of fantasy to it.
But
there's
like dragons and stuff, right? Or magic.
You can say. It doesn't bother
None
me.
None of us care.
Okay, yeah. Well, there is dragon. I mean, people are from dragon blood, like the lineage and stuff. So. Okay.
Awesome.
Sorry.
No, I'm excited about that series, too.
I care. Yeah. I just mean I don't care about the spoilers because it's like...
It's not... Yeah, it doesn't bother me.
My life, but...
Okay, so the movie. Technically, I actually enjoyed it a lot. Visually, I thought it was stunning. I think a lot of the things that they did in it were just... And I've said this since the very first movie, what those movies do for me is take all the images that I have in my head and make them physically, visually real. So when I see a dragon in my head, whoever the director is, I mean, because she explains it so well, she's so adjective heavy and detail oriented in her books, it's hard not to create something visually because she describes it so well and so in depth. So everything, and I think in this movie especially, it was just stunning.
The
visuals
are pretty faithful to the book.
However, there were some minor CG things that really just stick out, like sore thumbs, and that were just so bad.
That was the
bad.
First thing I asked. We went and got a drink after the movie, and I was like, were there some moments where you were like, oh, that looks CG? And she was like, yeah, totally. I'm like,
yeah,
good,
it's going to worry me because I'm going to go see it
But
in
there
IMAX.
Are a lot of moments that were CG and looked awesome.
I'm almost wondering, though, if it's going to look better in IMAX and if it's just because we saw it in this like smaller screen that we were like, that sticks out funny. Like, I don't know. We'll see. There, when you're kind of like when the screen's bigger than you can see, you know, I don't know.
So technically, They are going to win Oscars. I think they're going.
To.
I don't know. I think it would do an injustice.
I don't think this is Return of the King kind of.
I don't know. I have a feeling. Just
that's the third one, right? Return of the King.
I mean, sure. Just. I mean, because in the. I mean, I don't know. I think so. Just.
I think that's emotion talking more than reality.
But I think that it has to account for it.
I mean, every year there's like when those things come out, there's like no one's ever heard of this movie.
I think they also like didn't they announce that they're only doing 5 best of again?
Are they?
Yeah, I think they the decided short. 10 was horrible.
Well, yeah.
It was a lot.
Who ever heard of the King's brutal. Speech before the
Oh no, it wasn't 5. They're doing you have to get like a certain percentage to make it into the 10. Because what happened was like movies were getting like 1% of the vote and they were like, yeah, sure. Yeah. Top 10 movie of the year.
So okay. Disappointing the last
anyways,
years.
Go ahead.
But yeah, I mean, the music, awesome. Mm-hmm. It was John Williams again?
I don't know.
I don't think it was.
I don't think it was.
I think I looked it up for some reason just because I was curious, and I don't think I saw his name on. I could
really?
Be wrong. I don't know.
Did he actually die in that Family Guy thing?
No.
But yeah, so.
It was Danny Elfman.
It was.
That was really good, Danny Elfman.
But yeah, stunning. And Gringotts Bank, amazing.
Yeah, that did look really good.
Amazing.
It's kind of like what you thought it would look like, pretty much, you know?
Yeah, but like better than what I actually expected. Like the intricacies of how they got from one place to another,
not
like without giving.
Williams.
No.
No?
It's Alexandre Desplat.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, then.
It didn't have that kind of. He did a good job.
Well, I mean, at some point, aren't you just extending sort of the groundwork laid by the original soundtrack?
He did part one too.
Yeah.
Well, good. He did a good job.
Good.
But sound effects, I thought, were great.
Yeah.
So maybe if not visual effects, then sound effects.
I mean, they might get some award. They're not going to. What I'm saying is, it's not going to be picture of the year or best.
No,
picture.
No, I'm not. I wasn't saying that, but I'm sure they will win something right. For, you know, whatever children's movie or whatever.
There's
I don't know.
No children's movie.
Whatever. But anyway,
you're still reviewing.
Okay, so technically, audibly, beautiful. I liked it as a movie. I mean, yes, it's a continuation, so it can't stand on its own because
right.
It literally picks up in the middle of what's happening.
Right.
But yeah, I enjoyed it. I have a problem with some of the things that they changed, but again, we talked about that, just saying that it was going back and.
Yeah, it just seems impossible for them to deal with otherwise, you know?
Right. Like, yeah.
You can't.
I can't. I know. I can't. There's so many things I want to say,
so,
and I can't. So,
Amy. Do you have any thoughts that you would like to know or share before walking into this movie?
Do you have any questions?
Any questions?
Well, you were saying they change things. I'm kind of wondering, because sometimes in movies, they kind of give it a Hollywood ending. And there are some major casualties that happen in the 7th book.
I'll tell you this. They definitely stick true to the book. So, yes, there are major casualties,
yeah.
And they stay true. There is no big Hollywood ending. Except for the one that she wrote in the book.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, they do the
ending. Oh, yeah. Do they do that
ending?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, it's there.
Yep.
Okay.
Good luck with that one.
Oh, no.
Honestly, that's my only...
The only thing I will say about the deaths, though, in this movie is that they aren't as epically shown as they are in the book. Like, it's kind of just like...
And this happened.
Yeah, like, there's like a scene where it's almost like recapping what... Not recapping, but it's kind of like the overview of what had happened. And
well, it's like almost like a MASH camp where everyone comes back in,
and they kind of show it there, but it's not. It's not like
it's not
people,
as heart stopping.
Who I know who you're talking about dying.
It's not as heart stopping.
It's not like as epically like, oh my god! It's just kind of
right.
It happens, and you either catch it or you don't. There's a lot of that. There's some of that with some of the big things for Longbottom too, Neville. Like some of his big moments. Are still big, but they're big in a different way because they can't happen the way they do in the books because of things that changed in earlier movies, you know.
Right.
So you'll see it. I don't think it'll bother you, honestly. It's not. It wasn't like a bad thing, and it wasn't something that I was like, "Why did this happen?" Like it just was.
There's I'm a little worried about that ending though, because I really loved how she.
You did. So you loved it in the book.
Well,
I'm
yeah,
trying to
it
think
was
of which ending you're talking about, because the there's epilogue. The epilogue.
Yeah. Yeah.
I liked how they all turned out in the epilogue.
See, I said that too. I
think it's a girl's thing.
I think.
Did you?
The epilogue? I just.
I thought it was so.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
That was my reaction. I was like.
And I said
it. Everybody ended up how they should have ended up.
Like,
right?
I said it.
By the way, if you are listening to this right now, we're like, so dangerously close to spoiler territory.
It really is.
You may just want to take a break. Hit pause, or not pause, just skip forward a few minutes, because yeah. this is teetering on
what
on
I was
going to
say is that if you have read the books, or even if you have seen the movie, like at the epilogue for a girl, it's like,
right. No, I understand. Before you go any further, I understand that. And that's why I'm saying, I think it's a girl guy thing. Cause I swear to God, Scott and I, and maybe also cause we were 27 and 28 or whatever when we read it.
And you have like, no heart.
No, but you read it and you're just kind of like,
okay.
I guess it's who you really connect with as a character in the story. And there are certain characters like that as girls, I think we connect
Shanks.
With as the guys.
I think for me to read the epilogue, like I could have just inferred all of that from the story.
But that's the whole part of like Rowling's like life and her world. And she wanted you to know, like, this is what happened. No,
but I would have guessed that would have happened.
I think that's the difference.
Oh, okay.
These are the differences we're talking about.
No, I'm just saying I enjoyed it.
I mean, it was fine.
I liked reading it.
But to see who, like,
it was fine. It was fine.
You needed closure, I think. Yeah.
When I read it, I was just like, okay. When I saw it,
it's
another story.
Oh,
technically as a movie, they could have left it off and it would have been fine.
I don't know. I think people would have been mad if they left that off. People would have wanted to see that.
It's just not done well. Honestly.
I don't think they could have here nor there that one.
Okay. Can I say something nerdy about the story as a whole?
Yeah.
That I was disappointed in, like sort of like overall, like there's a phrase that people shout out a lot in the film and it's like Merlin's beard. Like it's like, that's your, like that's the exclamatory phrase in this world. And the whole time I was sort of expecting something in the story to connect to
Merlin
and the Knights of the Round Table.
Don't they talk about Merlin at one point in like the first or second
book? In
the books
they do.
I must not remember it. But
she has done so much research, even in the names, like Draco comes from dragon and she did so much research when she was kind of doing these and very purposefully named things certain ways.
What I'm saying is I think they did in the book, just not in the movies.
I must not remember, but I guess I expected to find out
Dumbledore
that
Dumbledore talks about him or something.
I think maybe I expected like, the Elder One was Merlin's one. You know, and that never happened. So I was just like, meh,
no.
Okay. Just nerd stuff. Whatever.
Was there anything, any other things that you thought of while we were talking here or no? I mean, are you going tonight or tomorrow?
Tuesday,
yeah. But I'll probably watch the first one again tonight. And, you know, it's been so long since I read the seventh book. And the seventh book, I really don't remember because I sped through it.
Me too.
And there was that traveling where you were just like, oh, my goodness.
And it was daunting. It really was, like, painful. And you
But I think that's
him.
What you're not getting any of in the second part of the movie. So it's
they kind of cut that the travel stuff really short, I think.
Yeah,
I mean, if you thought
one.
It was short in the first one,
there's none of it in part
none
two.
None of it in part
and
two.
And see,
so.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, I would have expected all of that in the
it
first
is, it
movie.
It is pretty much go time. Even when there was traveling in the book that happened in part two, they don't even hint to it. They just literally like appear where they are next. It's like, and now they're here, and now they're there, and you're like, oh, okay. But I mean, they needed to fit so much in. I mean,
and there was that whole discovery
them.
Phase of like learning the story of Dumbledore, and like, so I don't know how much they.
Mm-hmm.
It happens, but it.
Yeah, there's a lot of it just kind of happens.
I'll put it this way, because Amy, you're just as big a fan as I am. I was not disappointed.
Yeah.
I really was not disappointed. I liked it. I enjoyed it. It's just will never be the same as the book.
I think for people who only watch the movies, this will be appropriate closure. And for people who read the books, I think this is just.
It told the story.
It's a good way to finish it out the movies, knowing that you were probably a bigger fan of the books than you were the movies.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Well, even going back to, you know, other movies, like with the whole time turners and books in book three and then book four, like they did things different.
Yeah.
They left Dobby out of, you know, four movies and they did it successfully.
Yeah.
So.
Right.
So speaking of space alerts.
Oh,
I don't even know what that was. That was like a weird cat.
I don't think you were speaking about space alerts.
What? I was just speaking about. I said, speaking of space alerts.
Oh,
space
you
alert.
Were just talking about it.
I had a hankering today to play a board game. I wanted a new one.
Cool.
I literally did. I woke up this morning and I said, I want to play a board game. And Melissa said, okay, we don't have anything that I want to play. And I said, this conversation didn't happen. And then, no, and then I was like, well, we're going to go get a board game. This is the fake conversation.
Oh, okay.
And then I was like,
yeah, that's smart. And so we left the house and we went and got a board game.
After
and
it's called comics.
Space Alert.
This is excellent.
I would say comic because I only had one in my subscription today.
It was Batman, wasn't it?
It was Batman. So we picked up a game called Space Alert, which is
Space Alert.
Put out by a company called Rio Grande Games. It is a space-themed game for 1 to 5 players. I said one, which sounds weird, but the difference between this game and most other board games is it's actually the team versus the game. Mm-hmm. So the game, basically the way it sets up is you're each a space pilot on a ship, on a single ship, all 5 of you or 4 of you. And in the process, you are trying to get this ship, like, basically transports into an area. It's scanning a planet.
Through hyperspace.
It's scanning a planet, and then it takes 10 minutes for it to scan the planet, and then it transports out, as long as you didn't die. So what happens for you as the player is the ship shows up, and then you listen to a CD that you play.
Which is awesome.
Which is actually kind of awesome. Yes. It definitely made the mood a little bit better. But you hit play on a track that corresponds with whatever you're playing, and then it goes, it has this computerized voice that then takes you through a 7-minute sequence where it announces things. Well, I would assume it's 7 to 12
time
minutes based on seven or 12.
It's probably longer in the actual
It's pretty awesome.
Right.
I kind of felt like I was in Epcot.
The computer announces things. Like, it'll announce enemy ships that are coming in
enemy
to attack you.
Enemy ship.
It'll announce what it calls incoming data, which means players can draw new cards.
Data incoming.
It'll announce data transfers, which lets you trade cards
Transfer
with other players.
Transfer data.
And then it'll also announce basically like when rounds are ending or how much time you have left before you've got to be done. So like operation ending.
In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
So
one.
During that phase, you as players lay out what we did 7 rounds. So us as players laid out 7 rounds of action. And that sounds ridiculous, but you literally, all 4 of you have to plan out 7 rounds of action that will then happen after the CD stops playing.
And it's 7 minutes long.
It is seven. You have 7 minutes to do, to make this plan while things are while ships are coming in. So nothing, like the weird part about it is nothing is actually happening. You're not actually fighting. You're not firing on the enemy ships. You're not moving anything around.
Planning what's going to happen.
You're literally just laying out what's going to happen. And then after that 7 minutes, whatever you laid out is what happens.
Then
it just,
you get to
it just goes.
Instant
from there.
Replay.
Right.
It's interesting because this game immediately reminded me of Pandemic, which is another one of those like the team against the game kind of board games. But Pandemic takes place in real time. And sort of like for people that have played Pandemic before, Space Alert is also a resource management and sort of team coordination game. But like Matt said, this game requires you to plan out everything that you're going to do before it's actually executed. So that's sort of the wrinkle that makes this game like dramatically different from a game like Pandemic.
Yeah. So you basically have a resource of energy, and then you have different types of guns that you're going to fire and shields that you have to power. But things can only happen in certain operations and orders. So as you're moving through making your plans, you'll, you know, say like, okay, I'm going to power up the ship, and there's 6 different sections of the ship you can be in. I'm going to power up the ship, and then Scott's going to run down and fire the laser and blah, 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 and this will happen by turn 3, and then this ship's going to be coming in. So we're, and you're doing all this, like you're planning it as time is moving. So everybody's just talking and doing it at the same time.
And you've got ships coming in and the computer's yelling at you.
Squawking at you, stuff's going wrong.
You need to transfer cards and five, and it's counting down, and things are happening while you're all trying to strategize what's happening.
Yes. So we started off with the 4 of us. We did the training missions, I guess, essentially.
Which I have to actually say, as you were reading the training manual, I had like a brief moment where I felt like I was in what was the movie
Star Command? No, not Star Commander.
What is it?
Last Starfighter?
Last Starfighter, where it's like, but at the same time, I also felt
that's
like
the one where the guy gets sucked into the video game, right?
Yeah. But he's like, you know, he doesn't know what he's doing there, and he's like, okay, we're gonna throw you into this, and
I mean, it
was cool.
I do have to say the way they set up how to play the game is not like, here's some instructions, start playing. It's actually a manual, like it's like a pretty relatively thick book that has flavor text in it. So
it's pretty smart that they actually included a tutorial book and a tutorial
CD. It's kind of video game like that they do that.
Yeah, so it actually walks you through. So you read through all the steps of how it's going to happen, and then you do it. But you're doing a pre-planned one, so they already know. They know in
the
instructions.
And you're the instructor.
What's going to be coming in? Yeah, I read the whole thing as the instructor. It's kind of ridiculous.
Kind of like
it's actual real flavor text. Yeah, but so the training missions that we did made it pretty painless. I mean, we did probably about an hour of reading and setup and all that kind
of
just getting the board ready.
Gameplay.
And then the game is 15 minutes long. I
mean, once you learn how to play, like,
yeah, like I was saying, we left it out because I'm sure that tonight Matt and I will, you know, play another round or two just to like kind of get comfortable with it.
That's how we get into sexy time.
Yeah, by playing board games. I was gonna comment on something that Amy said earlier. Like I've said this before too, and it's funny. It's like you said it was like a video game. And I think I said once, I was like, well, why isn't this just a video game? And it kind of like, you think about it, it defeats the purpose of like...
Getting four friends in a room and playing. Yeah.
Everybody getting... it is like a video game, but the idea is that we are
Working together. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't really know how well I've explained how to play the game, but...
Well, I mean, the basic premise of
basic
the game.
Basic premise is it's a little different. You are playing against, as a team, against the board game. You're planning all your moves out, and then you watch those moves happen... as they would happen. There's actual set of rounds that go through. And
the problems that we ran into, we realized certain things have to happen before other things, and you go in order.
Turns. Well, I don't know how you guys are going to do two players. I have no idea. It was crazy four.
They can probably modify the rules for two, I'm assuming.
There's
no way
that
you'd be able
to
win.
Do in like
depending on like
moves?
how many things come in, you might not be able to win with like on that level.
Yeah, I mean, I guess because you have to. So there's three parts of the ship, and those three parts can have three different enemies coming in at
you. It's an American ship. It's red, white, and blue.
It is red, white, and blue. That's more because nobody knows what port and starboard are. Less because it's American. So those enemies come in from three different sides essentially, and then you have three different kinds of guns that you can fire at them while they're coming in. So I did completely spring this game on Scott and Amy. They walked into me setting it up and were just like, what is this? And I was like, we're playing a board game. Awesome. So I want to know, how did you feel? Did you like it?
I've played Pandemic before, and I really like that game. I like this concept of like the team against the board, you know, like I will admit that I do get competitive in board game situations sometimes. Some worse than others, but
yeah.
I kind of like this, just having a different dynamic of trying to get everyone to work together. And then, you know, what the best part was is when we actually saw everything play out in the sort of the resolution phase, we kind of like laughed about like all the stuff we did wrong, and like we lost once and we're like, haha, that was cool. You know, it was only 7 minutes of your time.
Yeah.
So why not?
I have do you think, because this game is admittedly, while it sounds really nerdy, is a lot more board gamey than a lot of the other games we've played.
Yeah, I mean, it's complicated, but I feel like once you get a team of people together who understand the game and know what the strategies are, I think like it'll be cool. Like there will be a better sense of accomplishment of having a team being able to overcome the board as opposed to just one person winning a board game against four other people.
So the question I was going to have is, do you think Jen would play this?
Oh, no.
Never.
No, I don't think so.
It's complicated, and for me, it's a lot of thinking. Like, I enjoyed it, but going through the instructions phase and learning what everything meant, like now that I understand it, because we played through it a couple times, and it was explained three different times to me as we were learning it, it was fine. But like, not ever having played a game like that before, it was a little intense. Hmm.
The game is meant to overload your senses enough to the point where you have to rely on the other people on your
team. It's forcing teamwork.
Yeah, it's kind of making you be overwhelmed.
Which is why we would do these like pregame sessions of like, all right, what's a general plan that we could, because you don't know what's coming in and you right. don't know what you have in your hand at that point.
Well, and like we said, like, okay, what is an overall strategy? And we said, okay, well, you know, let's take the left side of the ship and the right side of the ship. And then, you know, people stay in the middle for generators and stuff. But that clearly didn't work in the first round.
It did better than the second round.
It did better than the second round. Well, in the second round, we decided to stay upper deck and lower deck.
Not really. I think the second round we kind of just
did whatever.
Played it,
the thing about the second round though is that like
we miscalculated.
Yeah, we did one miscalculation early in the game.
Screwed
the whole because we got the other, you know, we got the second turn wrong, got the other five turns right, but we still lost.
Because basically what happened to us is there's a range and we miscalculated the fact that we couldn't hit a guy in a certain range and we went ahead and did it anyways. And due to the fact that you plan this stuff out and then it plays out, we basically made that plan. We're like, this is going to work so well. And then it did it. And we realized right when it was about to happen, we were like, we planned incorrectly.
I think that's
we're
what's really
range.
Smart about the game is the
and,
planning.
Well, yeah. And just so then you see it play out and you're just like helpless to watch this thing you know is going to go wrong. Yeah.
And just to reemphasize, like we're planning 7 rounds in 7 minutes and while there's a computer yelling at you the whole time and we're trading
and
cards and picking up new cards.
And there's a 12-round version.
It's frantic.
I know.
Totally
gonna be
frantic.
Exciting.
So, Amy, what did you think?
I thought it was
awesome.
You
probably have this is the least amount of board game experience out of the four of us,
right? Well, this is the first modern board game that I've played. Gosh, I mean, the last probably board game was like Monopoly or something.
Right.
So I haven't played any of the newer board games, but I loved it. I thought it was
awesome.
Fun? Yeah, I'd play again.
I mean, was it overwhelming? Like the
instructions,
because it was a wordy amount. It was a lot of instructions. I think they did it that because the actual instructions is not that thick.
Well, and I thought it was written well, so it kind of played out like you are in the simulator, and this is what you're in a classroom, and it was neat.
It was
like
funny.
That's why I was saying like the element of feeling like at Epcot when you're going into like you know, Star Troopers or whatever it is, and they're like, here, this is what's gonna happen, and you know, buckle your seatbelts.
It did kind of like have a little D&D like intro guy.
Yeah.
That's
this is the way I feel about this kind of game is that if you take the setting out of this game, it's not that nerdy. Like if you look at what you're doing, you're planning moves and then seeing like this could be a financial game.
Yeah.
You're like, I mean, this could be a stock market game.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
And it would have the same kind of mechanic to it. It's just that they set it in space because it could be a little hokier and a little more fun. I think what would turn people off is that flavor test, is that introduction, which is so much fun. And that's the part that I feel people would be like, this is stupid. And like,
I'm
not
reading
anymore.
This crap.
It would be impossible to learn the game without the tutorial.
I know, but you get what I'm saying, though? Like,
yeah, no,
I just feel like that's what would turn people off. I think this is, we are usually pretty good about reviewing cheaper games, too. Like Small World's like a $20 game,
which
is
so much fun.
Small World's great. You know, the Back to the Future game,
which
was
they
like
have
$8.
Two expansion packs too. Mm-hmm. Actually, the Mega.
This game, $43. So this game is on the higher, not
but
even the higher end.
But again,
it's probably like mid range.
This is totally replayable, and you'll get different outcomes. Like with different
again,
groups
compared
of people.
To the price of a video game, it's still reasonable. You know,
and it gets your friends in the room. You know, there's even like a solitaire element of some sort where you can play one player versus the board. I have no idea. I don't know.
I don't know how you'd survive.
I don't know how you survive it. Maybe it spawns less ships and you have more turns or something. I'm not sure, but the game's called Space Alert. I kind of picked it up on a whim.
I would totally play it again. I'm stoked on it.
A large nerd told me that the game was good while we were at Cool Stuff.
That's the best way to buy stuff.
Melissa did pick it out. Melissa picked it up and said, "What about this one?" And I was like, "Well, I don't know." And then the guy walked in. He was like, "That game's great.
Cool."
We're like, "All right."
Thanks, guy.
Yeah. Well, and it really was like reading the back of the box. Like it really, the only reason why I wanted to try it was because it was like everyone working as a team.
Well, because
and
you played Last Night on Earth with us.
Right.
And you were like, I want that kind of experience.
Well, and the only difference between that and this was that you were working as a team against like a DM, like somebody that was running the game.
Right.
Where this is, you're literally playing against a CD.
The DM is on the CD.
Right.
Yeah. So go pick it up. Game's called Space Alert. We try to push board games pretty hard here, I think, because we love them. They're fun. They're generally relatively inexpensive, and you get all your friends together to play. Hell is unleashing outside right now, so we're going to go ahead and stop and not do the Emmy nominations.
Next week.
So next week, you can look forward. We're going to talk about the Emmy nominations and who got elected, because there's a few of my favorites in there. So Melissa, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
For bringing your Harry Potter knowledge. Amy, thank you for coming on. We may have you on again soon. Who knows? Melissa, definitely not. And
and hey, happy 30.
Happy 30th to us.
Yeah. Woo-hoo.
Happy 30, Scott.
We did
we're
it. 30. Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, we're out.
See ya.
Boom. Bye.